going to talk in this conference about a great Legion missionary named Father Aidan McGrath. And I want to tell you the story about the Legion in China. It's a fascinating story. We can learn a lot of lessons about our Lord, Blessed Mother, and the Legion by listening to his story. I'm going to spend this conference and tonight's conference on the story because it's such an important episode in church history as well as Legion history. And we'll go during this conference and take you right up into the time that he was arrested. And then tonight I'll tell you all about his imprisonment and what happened to the Legion during that time in China. How many of you know Father McGrath? How many of you have met him? Okay, a number of you. I just spoke with him on the phone the other day. I spent an hour with him talking on the phone. He sends his regards to all the legionaries in Philadelphia. Father McGrath was born on January 22nd in the year 1906. Okay, in Dublin, Ireland. And of course that means he's 94 years old. But if you ask him, he says he's 95 years old. Because he goes by Chinese reckoning. Does anybody know what that is? From the moment of conception, right? That's very important because in China, that's how they tell your age. So whatever your age is, plus 9 months. Isn't that a wonderful pro-life way to tell your age? It especially helps if you're only like 20 years old and you want to get a drink at the bar. You say, oh yes, bartender, I'm 21. Father, as I said, is just about 95 years old. He's on his third guardian angel. Not too long ago when he was in Taiwan, he came across a bishop, and the bishop says, Father, are you still here? And he says, yes, I'm still here. Well, Father's background is very fascinating. He was one of six children, and he and two of his other brothers became Columban missionary priests. The oldest brother entered the Columbans in 1918. He entered in 1923, and his other brother entered in 1929. Father had attended Belvedere College and had played soccer with Kevin Barry, who was very famous because of the song made about him. Father excelled in sports during his time in the college and then felt a vocation to the Columbans. The Columban Order was established by Bishop Galvin, who was a priest from Cork who eventually went to New York and then to China. And Bishop Galvin with Father John Blewick founded the Columban missionaries way back in around the year 1911. And Father McGrath was ordained a priest in the year 1929 at the age of 23. So he had to get a dispensation from the bishop to be ordained 2 years lower than the normal age. He was ordained in Galway. And then just as a baby priest, a young priest of 6 months ordained, he was sent to China in the summer of 1930, along with five or six other newly ordained priests. He didn't even know Chinese. And he didn't take an airplane to China, he took a slow boat to China. It took 6 weeks from Ireland to get to China. And he says it was a difficult journey, but he said not too bad. And then once they got to China, then they had another four-day journey up the Yangtze River, 700 miles to the Columban Diocese of Haiyang, or Hanyang, which is in central China. And about a year after he got there, there was a terrible flooding of the Yangtze River, which took the lives of hundreds of thousands of people. And Father had 16 feet of water in his house. He had to enter his house by boat. All his books and clothing were destroyed. Well, eventually the bishop sent him up to about 100 miles north of there. I'm not sure if I can pronounce this, but it's something like Shenqiang, okay? But it's 100 miles north of where he was, and he was sent up there to be a pastor. And he was there for about 16 years. And he said during his time there, no bishop and no superior ever made it to see him. He was there all by himself. So he was there for, as I said, about 16 years in that location. And before Bishop Galvin sent him up there, he said, there's no church, there's no school, there's no rectory. just go up there and baptize as many as you can and convert as many as you can. And he says, I don't think you'll ever be able to have a church up in that locality, but we need a priest up there. And he was the only priest in about a million people in that whole territory. So when he first got there, he rented a little house on the street, but after a while he couldn't pay for that anymore, so he moved into another house. And then eventually he moved in with a Buddhist family. And this Buddhist family had a patriarch, you know, a very venerable grandfather, who had three sons who also lived in the big house, with three daughters-in-law and 20 grandchildren running around. And there was a little Buddha sitting up there on the mantle. And after a while, in fact, this particular house was part of a pickle factory. And because they had grain there, it was loaded with rats. He had hundreds of rats that were crawling all over the place during the time he lived there. But he said, you get used to rats in China. You get used to anything in China. Well, eventually, the grandfather picked up a catechism. His grandfather had been raised on Buddhism and Confucius. In fact, Confucius was very respectful of the elderly and respectful of life, and you would never hear any talk about things such as abortion or contraception at all. And these were pagans. And so the grandfather picked up the catechism and said, this is excellent stuff. And he wanted to be baptized. And so Father baptized him, and of course all three sons, all three daughters-in-law, and all 20 grandchildren got baptized as well. And they took down the little Buddha and replaced it with, I'm not sure, the Blessed Mother or the Sacred Heart. And Father had a nice little room in the house with his chapel. But that was just the place where he used as a home base. He also had 25 missions, or little barrios, villages that he was in charge of. And he, as I mentioned, he's the only priest amongst these millions of people. He would travel around to each of these different villages, and it would take him 2 months to get around. And of course, there were no buses, no cars, no bicycles even. He had to walk, and he would take his blanket, his bedroll, and just walk from village to village and spend about 3 days in each of these missions. He would baptize, he would hear confessions, say mass, instruct. He would bless the graves of those who died, and would take care of, you know, all the marriage validations, the marriage blessings. And then he would come back to his home base. And when he would come back, he would feel so, in a sense, so useless or so helpless with all these millions of people and he being the only priest. So he knew that Pius XI was encouraging Catholic action. So he decided to start a group of Catholic action, get lay people involved. He called it later on, he called it McGrath's Folly, okay? Because he said he didn't know how to run a lay organization. He didn't know about the importance of discipline and prayer and formation, all the things that we know about now through the Legion. So he sent out his lay people as untrained apostles, and they made all sorts of mistakes. And it caused him so many problems and headaches that he called in the group of lay people and he scolded them, and they turned against him. And they took revenge on him and wrote a terrible letter about him and sent it to every bishop in China. So long before any of the bishops heard about Father McGrath, they heard and they got this letter about him. So of course that turned him against lay involvement in the church, and he was very upset with what had occurred. And after he scolded them, he lost almost all his parishioners. So there he was, almost alone, and didn't know what to do, so he asked the bishop for other priests to help him, or sisters, or catechists, and the bishop could send him no one. But the bishop did send him a book, and it was the Legion of Mary handbook. He probably said, hey, thanks a lot, bishop, that's all I need. And he had never heard, believe it or not, he had never heard of the Legion, even though he was born and raised in Dublin. He was in the seminary from 1923 to 1929, during this whole episode of Bentley Place and the growth of the Legion, but he had never even heard of the Legion. But he looked at this book, and he knew it wasn't going to work, but he said, in those days, we used to obey the bishop. Where, of course, these days, people tell the bishop what they want to do. But back then, he says, we used to obey. And because of that, he decided to start. And he he told the bishop, or he told himself, after it fails, I'll send the book back and that'll be it. So what he did was, he decided to gather around himself about six men, and they followed the handbook perfectly, and they did everything the book said, and the first Presidium meeting was held at midnight, because he did not want anybody to know he was starting the Legion, because he had started this other group and it failed, and he was the laughing stock, so he started this at midnight, and they were not allowed to tell their wives where they were. And so imagine this, every once a week these men would wake up and go out of the house and come back an hour and a half later. And so the very first assignments that he gave were some very difficult cases, fallen away Catholics, people that had turned against him, marriages that needed to be validated. And they went out and they reported back the next week. But the next week, when Father was going to have his second meeting, there were still people on the street, so he told all the men to go back home and come back at 3 in the morning. So the second week it was held between 2 and 3 in the morning. But when they had that meeting, everything he had assigned had been done perfectly. People were now coming back to church. People were now coming back to the sacraments, and his parish was being built up again. And this happened week after week after week, miracles of grace. And so after 6 months, he said, now you can tell your wives where you've been this whole time. And eventually, soon after that, he started not only the men's group, but he had a presidium for women, a presidium for high school age girls, a presidium for high school age boys, and a presidium for 7-year-old children from age 7 to 11. And their job was to go out into the villages and bring the other children, other 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds, and take them by the hand and lead them to Mass and bring them to instruction. And within no time, Father had 5 presidium, 100 to 135 active members in his parish. And they were properly formed and properly well-trained by the Legion system. Obedience, prayer, discipline, and all the training that they needed. And Father said he was a very happy priest, a very happy pastor, because they would also go into the prisons and they would instruct the bandits that were about to be executed, and they would baptize them before they were executed. And Father estimates he had about 700 adult conversions through the work of the legionaries. In fact, he did what Father Bradshaw said, a priest should do 100 men's work a day, but use 100 men to do it. And including women in that, of course. So that's what he did during that time. Now, 1937 was an interesting year. He'd already been in the mission about 7 years. 4,000 Japanese soldiers came into the town where he was. And the people were terrified because this was the same Japanese army that had already gone through Nanking the year before. And you might have read about in history the rape of Nanking, where hundreds of thousands of people were killed and women raped, and it was a terrible, terrible situation. And this was the same army that was coming to their town. The Protestant ministers came to him and says, Father, are you going to leave? Because we're going to leave, because we have wives and children. We can't stay here. So all the Protestant ministers fled and took their wives and children with them. Father, of course, stayed. Because he said, this is my family. I'm a Catholic priest. I'm not going to abandon my people. So all the people, the women of the village, came to him for protection and said, Father, what shall we do? So later on, he looked back and said, well, I was a 5'3" Irishman. I could protect them. So he gathered all of them into the pickle factory where he was living. And all these women, 1,500 women and children, brought water, food, provisions, wood, oil, to stay there in this compound because they had a gate around it, a wall around it, and it was keeping them out of the view of the soldiers. So the night that the Japanese came into town, 4,000 of them, Father went down, dressed, of course, as a foreign missionary priest, and tried to see the general, and the general would not see him. He tried to talk to the interpreter. The interpreter wouldn't talk to him. He thought everything was lost. He thought that there was going to be terrible pillaging and that the women would be violated. He just had trusted, though, in our Lord and the Blessed Mother. As he was walking back home to the compound, a Japanese soldier saw him and saw he was a foreigner, and this Japanese soldier had a few words of English. So he says, "Father, come over here." So they began talking. They began having some discussion. And eventually, Father brought him back and showed him that he had, you know, some women that he was protecting. And eventually they got discussing the movies. And this Japanese soldier was totally in love with Loretta Young. And Father says, "You're kidding. I know Loretta Young personally." Actually, Father had met her in Los Angeles, in Hollywood, at a benediction. And he said, "Loretta Young doesn't have a very good singing voice," he said. But that special meeting that he'd had with her, he told this Japanese soldier that he had met her. And the Japanese soldier couldn't believe it. He was so excited. And he says, "Father, is there anything I can do for you?" He said, "Well, you know, I have these women I'm trying to, you know, protect." And he says, "No problem." So he sat down and drew these Chinese letters, these Chinese characters, and the soldier took the seal out of his back pocket and stamped the sheet of paper. And he says, "Father, put this on the gate and you'll have no problem." And that's what he did. Father put that on the gate, and for the 6 months that the women and children were there, not one soldier dared to enter into the compound. Isn't that miraculous that out of the 4,000 Japanese soldiers, this was the one that Father met? And Father was telling the story to Sister Breege McKenna, and she said, "Father, that was a first-class miracle." Well, after 6 months, they were free to go about as they please, but during the 6 months, his 5th per city of the Legion had converted all 1,500 women and children. And so, Father says he baptized nearly every single person that was in there. Because for the 6 months, they had nothing to do but to pray and to instruct these people. His 5th per city had worked among these women. Well, then the Japanese expelled Father McGrath from that town. And he was expelled for 2.5 years because the Japanese did not think that Ireland and De Valera were neutral. But when De Valera refused to give the ports to Churchill, then the Japanese realized that Ireland was neutral. And so they allowed him to come back. And when Father came back, he thought everything would be in chaos because they were without a priest. And it did happen that while he was gone, the lady president of his presidium was shot dead. But throughout all of that, there was a smoothly functioning parish there. When he came back to his parish, all his legionaries handed him the books showing him all the babies that had been baptized, all the marriages that had been witnessed, all the people that had been instructed, all those that had died and needed their graves blessed. Father said, it was a smoothly running parish. For 2.5 years without a priest, the Legion, the 5 Presidia, ran that parish. He said it was humiliating because he expected everything would fall apart since the priest wasn't there. Well, then came the communists. And well, actually what happened, after 16 years, Father's health began to break down. And so he went back to Ireland for the first time in 16 years to recover, spend a little bit of time there. He spent less than a year. And this was then when he first got to meet Frank Duff. Because up to this time, all he had experience of the Legion was when he got the handbook and he had not had any other contact. So he began spending time with Frank Duff, and then Frank Duff became his correspondent when Father McGrath went back into China. But what happened was that in 1946, Cardinal Archbishop Ribéry was sent to China as the papal nuncio. Archbishop Ribéry had been in Dublin as the secretary to the nunciature, and then he had gone to Africa as the nuncio, and there he had met Edel Quinn. Now, isn't it amazing that not only did Edel Quinn change the course of history in Africa, but she changed the course of history in China. Were it not for Edel Quinn so impressing Archbishop Ribéry, he never would have learned about the Legion or became convinced about it enough to have it started throughout all of China. If you read Cardinal Suenin's book, it says, in the heart of the African jungle, China was being saved. So Edel Quinn did change the course of history. So he was so impressed with what this dying girl did. He said she did more than any priest could have done in Africa. And I want that same legion throughout China. Because they knew that Mao Zedong was soon to take over all of China. Mao Zedong had taken Hankou in 1928, and then after World War II, began taking over more and more of China, and had forced Chiang Kai-shek to withdraw to the island of Formosa. So now Mao Zedong was outside Beijing in 1947. And so the papal nuncio, Cardinal Archbishop Ribéry, went to Shanghai and he looked all over for the Legion, but he couldn't find any Legion groups. But then he was told of Father McGrath, that Father McGrath had the Legion 700 miles away. But at this time he was over in Ireland. So Father McGrath received a message from his superior saying, go immediately to Shanghai and meet with the Archbishop. And that's what he did. He met with the Archbishop, and the Archbishop said, we probably only have a year or two to work before Mao Zedong reaches Shanghai. I want you to go and to spread the Legion, starting in Shanghai, and then go all over China. And Father McGrath said, Bishop, don't you think it's a little too late? And you know what the Bishop said? Do what you're told. And the Bishop said, you know, we have 500 million people in China, but we only have 5,000 priests. And even if we doubled or tripled the number of priests, there's no way we could convert China without getting the lay people involved. And so Father McGrath was given his commission to begin, and he began early in 1948. And it was an extraordinary time of grace, because people knew that the communists were about to come in and take over all of the country. And he knew of the impending danger, and they rallied and they responded tremendously to the fact that the lay people were going to have to save the church, because they knew what Mao Zedong was going to do. They knew he was going to take over the universities, the schools, the hospitals, that he was going to expel all of the foreign missionaries. There were at that time 3,000 foreign priests and 2,000 foreign sisters. They knew that they were going to be expelled, and that's exactly what happened. After Mao Zedong got there, he did expel all of the foreign priests and missionaries, and that left it up to the Chinese lay people. And of course, Mao Zedong arrested and imprisoned or killed all of the 2,000 Chinese priests and the 5,000 Chinese sisters. And so there was a tremendous amount of grace being poured out now, because they knew that they had to do something to save their church. And so the young people rallied, especially the university students. Well, Father wanted to start, you know, among the barrios and among the peasants, but Archbishop said, no, I want you to go to the universities. And so he went to Aurora University in Shanghai, run by the Madames of the Sacred Heart. And within 30 minutes of showing up at the university, they had their first presidium meeting. 18 of the wealthiest girls in Shanghai attended that first presidium meeting, all dressed in beautiful silk clothing. The Madames of the Sacred Heart, the nuns, were so convinced also that they encouraged it within the university. And within a few months, they had 15 presidia in the university and the junior schools there. It just burst into flames in Shanghai. Well, then, we know that the Shanghai eventually fell to the communists in May of 1949, just about a year after Father had been there. But before that, Father was able to go up to Hankou, to central China, and establish a curia there. He went to Beijing and set up a presidium at Fulan University, run by the SVD fathers. And again, it burst into flames. Within months, they had dozens of presidia. Within 6 months or a year, they had hundreds. And in fact, they know for a fact that within 1 year after Father started, there were 1,000 presidia. Within 2 years, there were 2,000 presidia. How many active members? Most likely about 40,000 active members of the Legion within 2 years. Incredible. Never has the Legion grown this fast in any part of the world. But again, it was an outpouring of grace because Our Lady was pouring out the grace before the communists would completely take over all of China. So Father, went down to Hong Kong, he established a Legion there, and in Canton. And then when South China fell, he flew over the communist heads to southwestern China and spent a year there working with the French missionaries establishing the Legion. Then he went to Chongqing, and the communists got there in November of 1949, and they took Chongqing there. And Father was there at the time and was told to stop his work with the Legion of Mary. He objected. He said it's a purely spiritual organization. He gave the communists the handbook and invited them to come to the meeting to prove that it was... He probably got some good active membership recruiting contacts that week. But he was to prove to them that it was a spiritual organization. So they read the handbook and gave it back to him and said, he said, Father, this is an excellent organization, just like communism. Because they knew... And they could see that it worked in the same method, little cell groups, little presidia. And they saw the discipline, they saw these things, and they praised it. Again, this is just when they were being exposed to the Legion. A year later, you'll see what they did. But by the end of 1949, almost the entirety of China was now under communist control. Then after Father McGrath eventually got permission, he got a pass to return back to Shanghai. And everything was quiet for about a year as the communists were organizing their government and their administration and they're planning their strategy. But pretty soon, things started to happen. The persecution began. The foreign missionaries were arrested and charged with incredible outlandish crimes and then expelled or imprisoned. And still, Father was able to work with the Legion in Shanghai and to extend it. And eventually he set up a synodus in Shanghai. And with the Father Joseph Tseng, they translated the handbook into Chinese. And they also corresponded, these two priests, Father McGrath and Father Tseng, corresponded with all the Legion presidia throughout China. And then, though, in the summer of 1950, the communists declared that they were going to set up patriotic churches, which would be schismatic Catholic churches that would be forbidden to be obedient to the Pope. They would be controlled by the government. And because of this, then the persecution came. What happened was the Chinese hierarchy refused to join the movement of the patriotic churches. The Catholic Central Bureau printed pamphlets describing that this would be wrong to do. And these were distributed all over China, especially by the members of the Legion. So the Legion was the one that stood up to the government in trying to break the Chinese church away from Rome. So the Legion began spreading knowledge and information about this. The spiritual directors of the Presidia informed their legionaries what was taking place, and then the legionaries in turn would tell the people during home visitation in the hospitals, in the schools, what was occurring. And so what happened was the communists got no support for the break from Rome, and they realized it was not working. So they began their tactics. They used the communist press to attack Archbishop Ribery, the Catholic Central Bureau, and the Legion of Mary. The Catholic Central Bureau was shut down in June of that year. Archbishop Ribery was expelled from China, and the press began its attack on the Legion of Mary in the summer of 1951. Frank Duff was called that imperialist of the Irish government. They misquoted the Legion handbook. They took quotations out of the Legion handbook, especially having to do with the Roman Legion, and twisted it all around. They even took the miraculous medal, an English medal, and it said, O Mary conceived without sin, pray for us who have recourse to thee, and said, that meant pray for the United States who have recourse to thee, okay? So they were using anything to persecute the church. Now this is a surprise why they would go so vehemently after the Legion of Mary. They call it public enemy number one. They say it's the greatest compliment ever paid to the Legion of Mary. Now what's fascinating about this is that there were 500 million people in China, only 4 million Catholics out of 500 million. So the Catholic percentage was just a very small fraction. And the Legion of Mary was only 40,000 out of 4 million out of 500 million. And yet, they named it public enemy number one. Why did they do this? Primarily because the Legion was the one who frustrated their plans for the schismatic church in China. Well, we know what happened then, that the Legion was suppressed in Tenzin, Shanghai, and other cities. And then the police were brought in, and the names, and they set up registration centers in all of the major cities. For example, in Shanghai, there were 40 registration centers that were set up. And if you were a member of the Legion, active or auxiliary, you had to go and register your name with the police. And they got the names, as many names as they could, from the Legion roll books. Actually, Father McGrath had told them to destroy all your roll books, destroy all the names of your active and auxiliary members, because they knew it would be dangerous if they got these. But they did get the names of the legionaries, and they put them on 6-foot billboards. The names, imagine your name next to it. And what happened was, it said, secret subversive organization, Legion of Mary members, registration center. And there were two guards with machine guns stationed next to these placards. And you had to come up and register. And this is what you had to say. I, the undersigned, join the reactionary Legion of Mary on such and such a date and conducted secret counter-revolutionary and evil activities against the government, the people, and Soviet Russia. I hereby resign from the Legion of Mary and promise never to participate in such activities in the future. The legionaries as a body refused to sign. They refused to sign this because they knew it was inaccurate. And only a handful went and registered their names because of pressure from their families. But most of them, Father said, went back and took their name off again. They withdrew their name. It was fascinating because at this time, the bishops were meeting and just trying to decide what to do. What should they do about the situation? Should we give in or not? And the Cardinal Kung Ping Meng, who later would spend 30 years in communist prison, read a letter from the Junior Presidium to all the bishops that were gathering. And the letter, as you know now, is quite famous because the junior legionaries had cut their fingers and had written the letter in their own blood. And they had sent it to the Bishop of Shanghai. And they said, Monsignor, we will follow you wherever you go. We are proud to live in this age of persecution. There can be no compromise. And that inspired the bishops of China not to compromise at Junior Presidium. Tremendous. And so because of that, the communists then arrested as many legionaries as they could, tens of thousands most likely. We don't know exactly how many were martyred. The estimate would be, I've heard 4,000 martyrs among the legionaries. I've heard as many as 40,000 members suffered persecution and perhaps imprisonment. But that was the situation when Mao Zedong came to power. One thing he did not mind, Mao Zedong did not mind Catholics going to church and praying their rosary or whatever. What he hated was evangelization. He hated the fact that people were being baptized and instructed and that the Catholic Church was alive. In fact, he was more afraid of the Legion of Mary than he was of America with its atomic bomb. He said, America can drop an atomic bomb on us. We don't care. We have so many millions of people. But what I don't care, what I don't like, is evangelization. Well, what happened to Father McGrath was people were being arrested all the time. Other priests were being arrested. And, in fact, it was very dangerous because of the fact so many people were committing suicide because they did not want to be arrested and be put into communist prison and tortured or shot. And so in the streets of Shanghai, you had to be careful where you walked because people were jumping out of like 20-story windows, killing themselves rather than be arrested by the communists. There were large numbers of people arrested at that time. Huge truckloads of people were carried off to communist prison. Father tells the story of one priest that always stood by his window, and whenever somebody went by off the execution, the priest would give them absolution. And he stood there all day giving absolution. Well, they waited a year to arrest Father. And one night, the 6th of September, at 11 o'clock in the evening, 200 soldiers surrounded his house, his rectory, and they walked in on him, and before they arrested him, they took photographs of him standing by a table, standing in front of his desk, and in front of the fireplace. Later on, when he got out of prison, you'll see the kind of tactics that the communists used. For example, Father had a picture of himself standing in front of an empty table, standing behind an empty table. When he saw the newspaper, when he got out of prison, the table contained radios and transmitters and all sorts of things that the communists had superimposed to make it look like Father was the one who was promoting American involvement and imperialism and was involved in the political fight against communism. Also, Father was standing in front of an image. I believe it was an image of the Sacred Heart. But when he saw the picture in the newspaper, it had scantily clad women that they had superimposed over the image of the Sacred Heart. Those are the kind of tactics that they used against the Legion, and in particular Father McGrath, because he was the one who spread it all over China. They confiscated 4,000 Legion handbooks that Father had in his rectory. And when they took him from the house, Father looked at his watch. 2 o'clock in the morning, the 7th of September, 1951, the 30th anniversary of the Legion in China, the 30th anniversary of the Legion. And Father smiled to himself and knew that that was a sign from the Blessed Mother that she had not abandoned him. One point I want to make from the last talk is that Father said that between the years 1948 and 1951, when he was working throughout China, the two things he did were to establish as many presidia as he could and give courses on St. Louis de Montfort's true devotion. And I'd forgotten about that, but in looking over my notes, he said those are the things that he tried to do. So we left off with Father McGrath being imprisoned. He was imprisoned for 2 years and 8 months, which is 32 months. And 25 of those 32 months he spent in solitary confinement. This prison was in the French concession of Shanghai. It was an old British prison that had been built. And the cells, there were 45 cells in a row, and the cells he describes as thousands in a particular cell block, and they had 10 to 20 blocks of these cells. The cells had no windows. When you looked through the bars, all you could see was a cement wall. Also there was no chair, no table, no bed, and of course nothing to read. He had to sit on the floor for 3 years and then lie on the floor at night. The size of the room, the size of all these cells were identical. They were exactly Father McGrath's length, which is 5'3". When he lay down at night, he could, spread his legs all the way from his head to the bars, but he said the fella in the cell next door was a 6'4" Texan, and the poor guy couldn't stretch out when he slept at night. So Father did bless the fact that God only made him this tall. So. And as far as the width of the cell, Father said if he held out his hands like this, like in the shape of a cross, he could not open his knuckles. It came right to his knuckles. That was the width of his cell. And all the cells were the same size. In the communist prison, you were not allowed to talk. You were not allowed to cough. You weren't allowed to sneeze. You weren't allowed to make any noise whatsoever. And you were never allowed to close your eyes during the day. And he said it was incredibly difficult to do this because in the early weeks, right after the lights went out at 9 p.m., they would, after about an hour, they would come in and wake him up and take him downstairs to be interrogated with the bright lights and the guards with the machine guns, and they would keep him up all night asking him these stupid questions about the United States and the government and imperialism and the secret organization, the Legion of Mary. And they asked him about Praetorian membership. They were really upset about this thing called Praetorian membership. And later on, he found out that many of the legionaries had been questioned about also if they were Praetorian members. So let's go back just for a moment to when he was first arrested, the very night that he was taken into prison. He said that when somebody was taken into prison, they wanted to commit suicide, and the communists did not want the prisoners to commit suicide, especially if they were foreigners. And so they would strip a person to make sure they had not snuck in a razor blade or anything that they could use to kill themselves. And so when Father was immediately taken into prison, he was stripped, and six guards searched him. And at that point, they took his watch. They took the shoelaces out of his shoe. They took the buttons off his pants. He says, I wonder how many buttons you have to swallow before he can kill you. And they took his rosary. They took the chains from around his neck and his medals. But he said one thing that these six guards could not see and did not see was his brown scapular. Not a little tiny scapular, a big brown scapular, probably about this size, over the front, strings, and over the back. And again, this was a sign from our Blessed Mother that she and our Lord had not abandoned him, but that they were always watching over him. And he didn't say anything about it, of course. And every day or every other day, between four to six guards would come into his cell, rip off all his clothes to find out if he had, found anything to kill himself with, even a little piece of bamboo that he could sharpen to cut a vein or an artery. And for 3 months, none of them could ever see his brown scapular. And obviously, if they could have seen it, they would have obviously taken it, because if they took the shoelaces out of a shoe, they certainly would have taken his scapular. Plus, they took the medals off his neck as well and still did not see the brown scapular. So it's a tremendous miracle, the story of the invisible scapular. Father says he still has the scapular today. Well, that first night, then after he was there for 3 months, one day the guards came in, ripped off his clothes, and they said, where did you get that? And they took it off his neck, and when he was released, almost 3 years later, they gave him back his watch and his scapular. So the very first night he was in the prison, he was interrogated and with these machine guns surrounding him, and they told him to lie down for a moment. He said he fell asleep within 2 minutes. The most incredible peace came over him, and he fell right asleep. And he really attributes that to all the prayers that were said for him during his time in prison. Now, one of the rules, as I mentioned, was the fact that you could not close your eyes at all during the daytime. And he said it was very difficult because you never knew, when the guard was coming, when he was going, and you could not hear the guard open the door down the hall, and so he would just show up right in front of your cell, and if he caught you dozing, if it was winter, they would take you outside and make you stand without any clothes on for a half an hour in the freezing cold, if they found that you had your eyes closed or if you were dozing during the day. He said that there was no bed, but there were thousands of bed bugs. He said it wasn't fair. You should only have bed bugs if you have a bed. But he did not have a bed, and he said there were literally thousands of bed bugs that would just crawl up and down the walls and across the floor. He said they were worse than the communists. They sucked his blood day and night for the entire time he was there, and they left terrible sores all over his body. And he said this was probably the most difficult part of the imprisonment, especially for the young female legionaries. These beautiful, very wealthy girls from the finest and most wealthy families of Shanghai, who had maids and nannies and had never even had to make their bed, and now they were in these communist prison cells with these terrible bed bugs. He also said the other thing that made it very difficult in the prison was that each prisoner had his own bucket in which to relieve himself to go to the bathroom. He said it stunk to high heaven, and especially when he considered 45 buckets in a row, he said the place was just absolutely terrible. He said that they got two meals a day, and the meals were a little tin of terrible rice, of bad rice, 9 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And they also got one cup of warm water, after each meal, even during the heat of the Shanghai summer. And many times he was asked after he got out of prison, "Didn't you go mad? How could you not go mad?" He said they went mad all around me. He said the man on his right, went mad within a month, and they did not remove him. If a man went mad, they would let the man stay. And he said this man shrieked his head off day and night during the entire time that he was there. And in fact, the first time that a man went mad and started screaming, the communist guard dropped his tray and ran out the door. That's how frightening it was. And Father McGrath said that the reason why he himself, of course, did not go mad, he attributes it to having made the De Montfort consecration. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But he also said it was his Catholic faith that kept him from going insane. He said these other poor souls, many of them were not Catholic. They were just enemies of Mao Zedong. And because they had no faith, something that you and I are privileged to have, they went mad. As I mentioned, it was also something that one of the most difficult things for him was the fact that he could not close his eyes during the day, and he was constantly falling asleep because they had kept him up so many nights interrogating him. And he would never know when the guard would appear. And when he was in solitary confinement, he noticed a little sparrow. Some of you know this incredible story of the sparrow that showed up at his cell. And so Father would save a few grains of rice and hide them behind the door of the cell so the guards wouldn't see. And then he would dry them. And then when the guard wasn't there and when the bird would appear, he would flick these little pieces of rice. And the sparrow would hop around and would eat these grains of rice, and Father said that was his television set for the time he was in prison. But he noticed all of a sudden the bird would whistle and then fly away. And within 10 seconds, the guard would appear right in front of his door. And he said that the sparrow had incredible hearing. The sparrow could hear when the guard was coming in and he would fly away. And then you never knew how long the guard was going to stay. 10 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, and he would just be walking up and down the cells, catching people with their eyes closed and opening the cell and screwing on these tight handcuffs or taking them outside. But as soon as the guard would leave, the bird would come back and be in front of him and play in front of his cell. And he says that what was wonderful about that is that when the bird was there, he knew the guard was not going to be there. So he could lie down for a few minutes, he could hum a little Irish tune, he could close his eyes, he could count the rosary on his fingers, and he says that bird was with him for the remainder of his time in prison. especially during the last 13 months. The bird was with him the whole time after he had been moved into a new cell way up on the roof, right below the roof. And what's fascinating also is the fact that they would often move him from one cell to another, sometimes into a different building. They would put a bag over his head so nobody could see that he was there, and they would march him to another cell block, sometimes in the basement, sometimes on the roof, and within 5 minutes after he got to the new cell, the bird would appear. And he attributes it, and I certainly agree, to our Blessed Mother told, remember at the wedding feast of Cana, she said, "They have no wine." And Father McGrath says, Our Lady told Jesus, "Father McGrath has no bird." I mentioned what kept him sane in prison, and that was De Montfort's true devotion. He said he had absolute peace of mind during the entire time he was in prison. He said he was never as peaceful in his life as when he was in prison. And he really attributed it to the prayers that so many people were saying for him, to the fact that he knew people were saying the Catena every day, and he united himself when he said his Legion prayers and rosary. He united himself as part of that chain, part of that Catena. But he said it was the true devotion that kept him sane. Later on, when he got out of prison, years later, in 1980, he was in Rome, and the Holy Father heard that he was there, that a man was there that had been imprisoned by the communists, and he called Father McGrath up to concelebrate Mass with him. A great privilege for Father McGrath. And afterwards, the Pope said, "What kept you sane in prison?" And Father McGrath said, "There's no doubt in my mind, Holy Father, the Montfort's true devotion." And the Pope started laughing, and he said, "You know what? That's what kept me sane when I was running from the Nazis and the communists in Poland when I was studying as a secret seminarian." One of the aspects of the true devotion that I particularly found interesting was that Father McGrath said when he made the consecration, he promised Our Lady that he was never going to be uneasy about anything. Never going to be uneasy about anything. Past or future, he was going to live for the day and not worry about the past and not worry about the future. But what was his spiritual life like in the prison? He had a plan of life, a schedule that he kept from 6 in the morning when the bell rang to 9 o'clock at night when the bell rang and the lights went out. And at 9 o'clock at night, he would lay down and fall fast asleep. He said that he was never been as busy in his life as when he was in the communist prison cell. He said the day was not long enough for all the spiritual activities that he had planned. He said as soon as he got into the prison, he followed the advice of his spiritual director from the seminary, and he blessed and thanked God for every professor and for his spiritual director he had in the seminary, who told him, "Never waste time. Don't have any empty hours or minutes in the day." And so that's what he did. He developed a schedule, a routine. He would wake up in the morning, he would kiss the bars and make his morning offering and say, "I glory only in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ." He promised himself he would never think of yesterday and he would never think of tomorrow. He said as soon as he started thinking about a week imprisonment, a month imprisonment, 6 months, a year, imprisonment for life, he started to shake and sweat, and he began to lose his peace. He would immediately say an act of contrition, and he would go on. And he said he never would think about his mother or his brothers or his family. He said as soon as he started thinking about them, whether or not his mother was still alive, he began to lose his peace. Began to sweat, began to get chills. He said, "No, never think of tomorrow, never think of yesterday. Be present, focus on the present, and do my schedule." And he kept his schedule every day. Let me describe his daily schedule for you. Besides his morning offering, he said he would say 3 rosaries before noontime and 3 rosaries in the afternoon. And he was not allowed to use his fingers because the guards would not let you use your fingers. One time they said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm thinking about God." They said, "You're not allowed to think about God." He said, that's how irrational these communists were. The highlight of his day was when he would say the prayers of the Mass. He knew the Mass by heart, of course, in Latin, and he would say the Mass each day at a certain hour. And then he would make a spiritual communion, which he called the highlight of his day. He also would make a, all we know what a spiritual communion is. When you can't physically receive communion, you can ask Jesus to come into your heart, mind, and soul, and then you spend some time in adoration and thanksgiving for the spiritual presence of our Lord within your soul. He then would also make a spiritual visit to the Blessed Sacrament. He knew that there were Catholic churches within the area of Shanghai, and he would spiritually adore Christ present in the nearest tabernacles. He, of course, did not have a Bible, and he did not have a catechism, but he knew a large part of Scripture by heart. In the seminary, they had taught him a great portion of the New Testament by heart, and he had learned it. Also, he knew the whole catechism by heart. Remember the old catechism? I'm not sure if it was the Baltimore Catechism. Whatever it was, he would go through each question, and he would have a daily time for mental prayer, and he would spend usually 2 hours a day in studying one of the articles of the faith, namely, who made you? God made you. Why did he make you? To know, love, and serve him. He would go through the whole catechism and meditate for 2 hours and study that particular truth of the faith. I think it's an important lesson for us that we also need to know our scripture and our catechism. And he said each question opened up a vista for him. He also would make the Stations of the Cross each day, and he spent time in mental prayer. He also composed sermons, homilies, in English, French, Latin, and Chinese. So he would write a homily in his mind, and then he would translate it into these different languages. And then he would also recite, he would have benediction, a spiritual benediction, and he would go through the prayers of benediction, the divine praises, and he would sing to himself Latin hymns. He loved especially St. Thomas's Laudate Salvatorem, and also the Dies Irae. And in fact, one particular priest that was in prison, Father had forgotten the words to some of these Latin hymns, especially the ones that were 26 verses long. And so I'll tell you in a few moments how they were able to write back and forth to each other. They used toilet paper, and they were able to sometimes pass it from cell to cell when the guards weren't looking. So for spiritual reading, Father didn't have any spiritual reading. All he had in his, in his cell, besides like a little mat that he sat on and a blanket, he had a toothbrush and some Chinese toothpaste. So every day for his spiritual reading, he read how many germs were killed per second by this particular brand of toothpaste. And he would calculate in his mind how many per minute, how many per second, just to keep his mind. He said that was his daily spiritual reading. He studied it every day, the Chinese toothpaste, the canister. Now, what were some of the fascinating prison stories that occurred while he was there? One interesting story he tells is that there was a priest named Father Morris Kavanaugh of Ascension from Peking who was arrested. And during the interrogation, Father Kavanaugh just passed out and he fainted and was asleep for 2 hours, and the communists couldn't wake him up. When he finally came to, they said, "You're forbidden to faint. If you're going to faint next time, ask for permission." So he said, that's how insane these communists were. He tells a story of Bishop Kung Ping Mei, who just died. I saw it in Maria Lay Jonas in the last issue, that he died. He was the bishop of Shanghai. He was bishop for 50 years, 30 years he spent in communist prison. He could have walked out anytime he wanted if he would separate himself from Rome and join the schismatic church and become part of the patriotic church. And on a number of occasions, Father told me just the other day when I was talking with him, he said that I believe on three different occasions they brought him out to confess his sins in front of all the people. And each time instead of confessing his guilt, he would say, "Long live Christ the King." And the people would cheer, and the communists would get furious, and he was taken back into prison. He was released at the age of 83, and he was able to come to visit, to move to Connecticut, where he died just this past year. At, I forget the age that he was, maybe in his 90s. And not only was he shown different churches that he could have become bishop of, but many Chinese priests were brought out of prison and shown patriotic churches and said, "You're welcome to walk out a free man if you would just become a patriotic priest in these churches." And of course they refused and were marched straight back to prison. Once Father McGrath was asked on one of the tapes, did they torture people in prison? He said the kind of torture they did was really of the mind, trying to get to your mind. For example, he told the story of Father Lagrange, who was the priest who was the editor of the magazine Christ to the World. They made him stand for 7 days and 7 nights, chained and between two guards with machine guns. And they would change the guards every 2 hours, every 4 hours, but him they made stand. And they would not allow him to sleep. They kept him awake, and he had to stand there this whole time until he would sign a document saying that he killed 2 men in the northern China. He said, "I will never do that. I would never sign that." But after 7 days and 7 nights, he told Father McGrath, as they were both released on the same day, and they were taking the train to Canton, which eventually they took him to Hong Kong and then back to Ireland. But he was telling Father McGrath that after a week, he said, "Something snapped in my mind." He said, "My memory is still clear, but my will was gone." Said, "I had no will, and I took the pen and I signed the document." And then they released me, and he was expelled from China. Father tells the fascinating story that in the early days, within the first week or two, in fact, it might have been the very next day, the first day he was in the prison cell, after a few minutes, a Chinese man said, "What's wrong with you? You're very calm." And Father said, I didn't think I was calm. He said, "I'm a priest." And the Chinese man said, "Thank God. I wanted to become baptized, but I didn't have a chance. Teach me a prayer." And so Father taught him the Holy Mary, you know, the second part of the Hail Mary. "Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen." And this particular Chinese man had helped the United States ambassador flee from China, and he went back. You know, this Chinese man went back and then immediately was arrested. And so Father then said, not only did the man want to know the Holy Mary, but he wanted to learn the Hail Mary. So Father taught him the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, the Hail Holy Queen, and the entire Rosary. And he said this man had a colossal memory. He then taught him the Catena, the opening Legion prayers, and the concluding Legion prayers. And during the weeks that they were together, again, I'm not sure if it was days or weeks, they said 12 rosaries a day. And he said this man was not even baptized, but he was the first auxiliary member in the prison. And of course, since they were not allowed to use their fingers, Father McGrath taught him a way to make mental pictures of all the mysteries of the rosary. And for example, instead of just one picture for every mystery, he taught this Chinese man how to make 10 pictures for every mystery, 10 different scenes. For example, with the Annunciation, you would have Our Lady kneeling in prayer, reading, you know, the sacred scripture. The second scene in your mind would be the angel Gabriel coming to the Blessed Mother. And so he taught this man, and this man made his own 150 pictures of the mysteries of the rosary. And of course, it was easy for the Scourging at the Pillar, the Crowning with Thorns. It was a little more difficult when you get to the, you know, the Assumption and the Coronation of the Blessed Mother. So he asked the Chinese man, he said, "What did you do for those pictures?" The Chinese man said, "Oh, we had a Chinese feast up there. The Blessed Mother was drinking wine and we're all having a wonderful time." Father says he baptized him in the prison, and he does not know whatever happened to him. He thinks he might have been shot because he had helped the American ambassador to be released. Another fascinating story was with a man named Wolf Lim, who was a German Jew who must have had incredible eyesight because he had a postage stamp and he had sharpened the pencil to razor sharpness. And he wrote an entire letter to Father McGrath on a postage stamp. He said his eyes were good back then. He could read the whole message. And he said he was not happy as a Jew, and he wanted to learn more about the Catholic faith. Now, Father had no paper or no pencil, and he said there was a Russian prisoner, a crook, is what he was, who, because he was Russian and had sympathies with the communists, they would let this Russian crook walk back and forth and occasionally, you know, bring food to some of the prisoners and do things like that. And the Russian crook said to Father, you know, is there anything that you want? And because he wanted Father's little mat that Father sat on, because apparently he liked the color of it. And so Father said, well, you know, I sort of need that, you know. And he said, is there anything you want? And Father said, well, as a matter of fact, I want some paper and pencil because I want to, you know, write some messages. Again, this was in the early days before the communists knew that they were communicating and passing messages back and forth. Eventually, when they found out, they moved Father into another area completely by himself, except for the little bird that was there. But he said that so this Russian crook got him, so he gave up his mat to get some paper, which I mentioned turned out to be toilet paper, and a pencil. And he instructed this German Jew on the toilet paper. And when he got out, this German Jew was released, and he said, do you have any messages for your friends? And he said, when you go to Hong Kong, tell my Columban missionaries that I'm still alive, I'm well, and thank them for their prayers. And so Father wrote a note to give to the Columbans, saying that he instructed this man, and the Columbans baptized this German Jew when he showed up in Hong Kong. And Father says later on, and after he got out, he went to Germany and they got together, and he's kept in touch with him all this time. I thought that was a fascinating story of Wolf Lim, the Jew whom Father instructed. There was another interesting case, which would be a man named Arnold Keen, who was a Protestant, who wanted to know the words of the Sermon on the Mount. And he loved the Sermon on the Mount, but he couldn't remember it, so he got Father to write down the entire Sermon on the Mount, which Father did, and gave it to him. Later on, this man, when he got out, after he was released from prison, he became a Catholic, and so did his niece. And Father has also been able to keep in touch with him. One interesting story that I just think is sort of a little bit humorous is that there was, I guess, a priest who dropped off some peaches, a little can of peaches for Father McGrath, and the guard kept telling Father that, you know, we have these peaches for you. And so, you know, this was a big change from two bad bowls of rice every day. And all of a sudden, Father started thinking, peaches. I love peaches. And pretty soon, he said that's all he could think about were these peaches. And he would ask the guards, you know, are you going to give them to me? And they wouldn't give. They were playing games with him, you know, trying to break his peace of mind, trying to break his concentration. And day after day went by, and still they wouldn't bring the peaches. And so Father realized what was happening. He was losing his peace of mind. So he said, to hell with the peaches. and he never thought about it again. He said, I don't want them. And the guard would then come up and say, Father, don't you want the peaches? Nope, I don't want them. And that made them upset because they knew he had regained his peace of mind and his composure. Now, he was, right before he was released, he spent the last 13 months of his life in the solitary, and 13 months in the prison, right below the roof. And it was freezing during the winter and incredibly hot during the summer. He was taken out of there and said that he was going to be executed. And they took him down for his trial. And there was no lawyer, no jury. He could not answer any questions. He was condemned for disrupting the youth of China. And then, he was standing in between two machine gun guards. He was told, get out and never come back. And instead of executing him, they expelled him. The communists really did not want to execute foreign missionaries. It would cause too much bad press for them in Europe. And as I mentioned, Father Lagrange was released the same day. So they were taken by train to Canton, then to Hong Kong, and handed over to the British police. And eventually he went back to Ireland. He asked what day it was. April 28, 1954. Anybody know the feast day? Feast day of St. Louis de Montfort. Father said he had just finished making his third novena to St. Louis de Montfort. So he was arrested on the 7th of September, 1951, released on the feast day of St. Louis de Montfort, April 28, 1954. As I mentioned, they gave him back his watch and his scapular when he got out. What I'd like to do now as we conclude this talk is just to mention what happened to some of the other legionaries that Father knows about. Father's always been asked, what gave the legionaries their strength to undergo such terrible persecution, imprisonment? And he said, by all means, it was de Montfort's true devotion. Many of them were sent off to slave labor camps, and some of them for 20, 30, almost 40 years. And they had to eat roots, dig out roots and eat them. And some of the legionaries said that all they sang during that whole time was Totus Tuus, the beautiful song dedicating themselves to our Blessed Mother. He also said, and this is something I thought was very interesting, he said that 95% of all the legionaries at that time, right before the communists took over, were Praetorian members. Probably nowhere in the history of the Legion has there been that many Praetorian members at one time. The estimate of the number of legionaries at the time, I believe, could have been close to 40,000. And we don't exactly know. Father himself doesn't even know how many were imprisoned. But he says thousands or tens of thousands most likely were imprisoned, some for 10, 20, 30, even close to 40 years. He was aware of the fact that they especially targeted Legion officers. And what's interesting, he said, was that many of these legionaries were recent converts to the Catholic faith. Some of them were baptized just 1 year, then they joined the Legion, and then the communists took over. He tells about the president of the Synodus of Shanghai. He was arrested 1 month after Father McGrath. He was imprisoned for about 10 years, and he was caught instructing another prisoner in the Catholic religion. He was taken out and shot in the back of the head. He was a father of five beautiful children. The vice president of the Synodus was a famous doctor of Shanghai, Dr. Chang, the father, I believe, of five or six children. He was imprisoned 1 month after Father McGrath. He was released 30 years later. And he now lives in California. Father says he's a little old man with cataracts, but he's still smiling. Another legionary, Joanna Shao, was age 21 when she was spreading the Legion all over China. She dressed as a young Communist Party member from the Youth Corps, and that's how she was able to travel by train all over China. She set up 362 presidia, and before they eventually caught her, up in northern China, and she was given 30 years of imprisonment. Eventually, she was allowed out. She was allowed out to teach English at a university. Eventually, she went to Germany, and now she's living in Ireland, and Father has met up with her on a number of occasions. All of you have heard of Noelle Wong. Father says she made the Montfort's True Devotion consecration at the age of 8. And she was the 19-year-old president of a junior presidium. And she was the one who inspired the children to march down the public streets of Shanghai, reading and singing from the Bible Matthew chapter 5, blessed are you when they shall persecute you in my name. Be glad and rejoice, your reward shall be great in heaven. She herself, we know, was given over 30 years in prison. And we know that she is now in Beijing. Father found out later that even some junior legionaries were taken in and questioned all night long. And the questions were, just who is this woman that dares to oppose us? And one little junior legionary says, you can't catch her, she's in heaven. He also mentioned that many times after the legionaries were released, they were put on parole and watched. And they had to carry with them a dossier saying that they had been in prison. And because of that, many of them could not get good jobs. He also mentioned the story of Catherine Ho, who was only baptized 1 year before she was arrested, and she spent 22 years in prison because she would not sign the fact that the Legion of Mary was a secret and subversive and anti-government and wicked organization. Even though she was only Catholic for a year, Father says, we don't know where these individuals got the graces that they did, but of course, we know it was the Montfort and the Praetorian membership. And then he says there were two young legionaries, ages 18. Both were given 22 years in prison. I believe they were the ones that, when they knew they were going to be arrested, went and shaved their heads because they knew about the bed bugs and the lice that they would have to deal with in the prison. After he recovered from the imprisonment, a year later, he was sent to England in 1955 to work with Irish immigration, and he spent 10 years in England because the bishops of England were worried about the fact that so many Catholics were falling away from their faith, plus the fact that many of the Irish were moving to England, and they asked Father to help train these Irish Catholics to be more involved with the Legion to evangelize while they were in Ireland. And England. And then Father spent 12 years traveling throughout the United States and Canada. That's where I'm sure many of you met him. And he and three other Columban priests, during his time, they started the Columban Method, which is when they would speak at all the masses, and then they would go out and visit the people that signed up to learn more about the Legion. The Pope Pius XII said that the greatest chapter in modern church history was the persecution of the church in China. In fact, the statistics are that Time magazine said in the 1954 issue that Mao Zedong killed 20 million people between the year 1949 and the year 1952. He executed 20 million people. So it's not unrealistic to know that our legionaries were among them. And that Time magazine later on said that the total would be Mao Zedong killed 60 million people between 1949 and 1970. But what's the state of the church in China today? Father talks about how the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the faith. And even though there is a patriotic church in China, which they started in 1958 after they had just decimated the Legion and imprisoned all the legionaries, they eventually won over many of the priests and bishops, and they started the Schismatic Patriotic Church in China. But he says that the good Catholics do not go to those churches. They only go out in the country, and they attend Mass sort of in the underground Catholic Church, which is now estimated to have 10 to 15 million Catholics that are loyal to the Pope and are in the underground Catholic Church. When Father McGrath was there, there's only 3 million Catholics in China. Now it's probably 15 million. And since then, Father has traveled to Japan, Korea, Taiwan, Hong Kong, visiting bishops and priests, trying to strengthen the Legion. And then for the last 20 years, he's been in the Philippines training lay apostles, training Filipino legionaries to be Inclay Maria and to go out and to convert Asia. And since then, he's had almost 50 legionaries that have volunteered to be part of the Inclay Maria program, and many of them have worked throughout Papua New Guinea and other parts of the world. So that's the story of Father McGrath and the history of the Legion of Mary in China,